Hey guys, it's Michelle.
And Hallie. This is Golf
Mostly.
Oh, that was excellent.
Thank you.
Good job.
I like really got into the zone there.
It was so good. We're kind of wearing team uniforms right now.
I hate this.
Yeah. We're both wearing a nice pastel yellow.
It's very How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days yellow.
Yeah. Hudson. It's giving Kate Hudson vibes. Anyways, speaking of team uniforms, let's talk about college. Right? Producer Chris, wasn't that a great smooth segue?
Yeah, great jump off there.
It was. Honestly, though, that was one of my favorite parts of college was team uniforms, being like on a golf team and you're just like squad right now. Actually, high school golf was funny because we had to wear, went to this private school and they had these really ugly ass uniforms, these like red and white polos, but whenever we had a golf match, we could wear these pink polos.
Oh,
and we'd be like, yeah, we have a little 9-hole match after school, so that's why we're wearing pink polos. But we had some pretty cool Nike gear at Rollins College. I enjoyed it very, very much. But that was such a funny, I guess, different aspect. You go from high school. Yeah, sure. I played like a little high school golf at the beginning of high school, and then when I went to IMG, represent, we didn't really have team uniforms or anything like that. We did team bags though. The golf bag was clutch. And then at Rollins, very much a big team thing. You'd be in a team van, go to team dinners, you'd party with your team, you'd work out with your team. It was really fun. I miss it. I really miss it.
Yeah, I was a civilian. You were part of a team.
Yeah, you weren't part of it. You weren't part of a team. We had very different college experiences.
Very different college experiences.
How many years did you take for yours?
Four and a half.
Four and a half? See, yeah, I took five. All right, so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. And we also learned we were both communications majors.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this girl over here thought I was an econ major. Oh, my gosh.
You're just so smart. Okay, so I will say, when I was at Arkansas, I had a friend of mine who was, I mean, communications had a bad rep because a lot of athletes did communications because it was seen as like an easy major. And at the time when I was at Arkansas, I was planning on being a double major in marketing and broadcast journalism. And my teammate, she was going to take 5 years to do a communications degree. And I was like, 5 years of communications degree? Like, just get a minor or something at least. Good Lord. And then who turns out to take 5 years to get a communications degree? Me. Because I transferred to Rollins into liberal arts school and they didn't have anything like broadcast or marketing or anything like that. So I did communications and I loved it. It is so useful. I mean, that's what we did. We're communicating right now as we speak.
We're using our major.
We are using our degrees. So, but man, it was really fun. But yeah, what did you, so you were a civilian, you went to school, but then how did you also, when would you like, could you leave? Because when I left for tournaments, we had a note from the athletic department to be like, hey, and they'd be like, all right, no problem. You can turn your assignments late. So like if you have a note from like the LPGA commissioner to be like, hey, she's got a tournament.
So I feel like Stanford is pretty chill. Like, you know, no one took attendance. Like, you know, when we had to take exams, we had the honor system, so we can take it either to the professor's discretion. We can either take it on the road when I come back or at the same time remotely as they're taking it. Huh. But even when you do take an exam on campus, because it's an honor system, there is no proctor in the room.
You just take it by yourself?
Yeah, in the room.
No teacher in there?
Mm-mm.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no one in there. It's full on honor system, and yeah. So
if you cheat, you just feel guilty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an honor system. It's like golf. It's exactly like golf.
Okay.
One time I was in Dubai playing in a tournament, and I had to take a statistics exam at like 2 a.m. in the morning. It was like a 3-hour exam.
Oh my goodness!
And then I had like a 7:30 tea time.
Ooh, that's brutal.
I think it was the one and only time I drank a Diet Coke in the morning. Three
it's
Diet
little,
Cokes
little
and an espresso.
Oh my god! Oh, yeah. I remember one time this one girl on her team. She was at Rollins and she was so smart, like biology pre-med. Whatever, and I think she was playing as an individual that week because she wasn't like super good, but everybody on the team traveled, and this girl, bless her heart, pulled like an all-nighter and was, so she had been studying, and I think, I don't know if she had turned in a paper or what, but she pulled an all-nighter, and then we had to do 36 holes walking the next day. And I don't know what, honestly, I think that was her recipe for success, because she played so well.
Oh, gosh.
She beat, like, most of the people in the starting lineup, and we're like, oh, my God, good for you. Like, you just need to never sleep before you play.
I've never pulled an all-nighter.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, man. I have some memories of walking back from the library just, like, in a daze, couple Diet Cokes deep, little coffees. Yeah.
Never. That's, I think, my the thing I'm most proud about is I've never pulled an all-nighter.
It's no fun. It's no fun. Yeah. I'll pull an all-nighter now if, like, if I go out. No, I won't. I mean, what do you constitute as an all-nighter? Like, do you have to – obviously, you stay up all night. But then if I stay up all night, like, I'll generally go to bed the next day for a couple hours.
Yeah,
like, but I never stay up all night unless when I was in college, like, stay up all night and then stay up all day until the next night. That's brutal.
That's never happened.
Oh man, yeah. That's no fun. Immediately, yeah. Like, just recipe for getting sick.
Oh yeah, you can feel it immediately.
Oh, you're like,
yeah. If I stay up like 2 hours past my bedtime,
I'm sick.
I have an itch in my throat. But I want to talk to you about your path post-college.
Yeah.
Because you have had quite an adventure getting to where you are now. I remember all the talks that we've had when your career concerns and, you know, and all that. So tell me about your path to get here.
Yeah. My path has been, kind of all over the place. Let's see. So I graduated from college. Then I went to New York City to do an internship. At the time, I thought I was going to turn pro, which I did turn pro for like 4 months. Went to Morocco for Q school, decided, I literally remember I hit this one specific tee shot and looked at my caddy and I go, it's not for me. And then I play like the rest 8 holes, just like, wee. But it was a weird, like sigh of relief. Like, okay, I knew that this was not what I wanted to do long-term. I'm glad that I gave it a go to really say, like, to prove myself, are you sure this is not what you want to do? And then I'm like, oh yeah, 100% sure it's not what I want to do. But I love golf. I really do. And I did at the time. So I was like, all right, how can I take what I love, which isn't necessarily playing golf for a living, but the game itself, mixing with the other thing that I love, which is entertaining and talking. So I went back home, found out about a job at Golf Digest as a social media coordinator, went to work for Ashley Mayo there, was there for 8 months. Then I went back to Florida, worked at the PGA Tour for 8 months, where I met producer Chris here. And then I was only there for 8 months, and then I went back to New York City. So I moved to New York City, back to Florida, back to New York City in the span of a year and a half. Shout out to my parents for helping me financially sort of go through that process, because I was a broke bitch. And oh my God, I mean, that was so expensive to move back and forth. Anyways, ultimately got back to New York City working for Golf Digest, and they were, you know, I told them, if I'm coming back, you gotta let me put a camera on my face. And they're like, all right. So we did that, and then ultimately started getting some more and more opportunities in the broadcast space and just like content creation in general. And then ultimately, decided to move to COVID hit, went to live with my family in Florida for a little bit, and then moved to LA. And again, Golf Digest just being so wonderful was I thought that they were going to say like, hey, it's either you work with us, you work here, or you do your own thing. And that was not the case at all. They said that they wanted to support me in my freelance endeavors and continue to work with them. So that kind of was the, I guess, the last, I don't even know what phrase, I'm going to make something up. The last nail in the coffin. Oh, that's a thing. Nail in the coffin. Yeah. I don't think it's used in this context, but I'll just say that was the nail in the coffin that made my decision sort of like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to kind of.
I think it's used in a negative.
Yeah, I think it is too. Yeah, but you know, I'm going to use it in a positive way here. To really say like, all right, it's time for me to, you know, take a bet on myself. And I think Golf Digest believing in me and being willing to, you know, support me throughout, I guess, what would be a kind of turbulent few months as I figured out like, oh, now I'm a business and now I have to figure out very much like a professional athlete. And Michelle, you've been doing this since you were 12, but like, or maybe even, I don't know why I said 12, 9, 10, 4, in terms of like, you are your business and you have to manage your schedule and your resources and your money and know when you're tired to take a break. And that has been a, you know, it's definitely been a learning curve for me. So yeah. It's been interesting though.
So talk to me about like your decision. You said you spent 8 months at, you know, each place, like Golf Digest, PGA Tour, Golf Digest, yeah. And I know the whole story, but I think it'd be beneficial for the listeners who are maybe be, you know, young in their career starting off. And I remember a lot, you were really struggling with, you know, the first time you left, you're like, okay, it's my first time. But then the second time you left after 8 months, you're like, okay, how bad does this look on my resume? I spent less than a year at two of my jobs. Mm-hmm. Like, should I just be sticking it out? But you knew in your gut what you wanted to do. So just kind of explain that to me for the listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So the first time that I left Golf Digest was because I got that opportunity at the tour. And I think ultimately, you know, when you're looking at a resume, if someone like generally interested in hiring you and it's something looks a bit funky, like you can always, as long as you have like a genuine explanation for that, I think that it could be like seen as a positive. You know, for me, someone could also look at that and be like, oh man, you're really jumping around a lot. But after those two stints, like I haven't really gone anywhere but Golf Digest in 4 years. And for me, I was just very lucky that an opportunity that was going to help increase my knowledge and skill level was on the table. So, and even when I went to Golf Digest, I remember I was sitting in Jerry Tardy, who's editor-in-chief, I was sitting in his office like bawling, and he was like, you are very much like entry-level. I was like, I'm sorry, I have to go. And he's like, it's okay, we've got 50 other people that can do your job. But I was very grateful for the opportunity to be there. And Jerry was so nice. He was like, listen, if you were my daughter, like I would tell you to take that opportunity. And I was like, okay, okay, don't miss me too much. But ultimately, I mean, man, that job was so great because it really helped me get an understanding for social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we didn't have TikTok at the time, but I mean, even more so now, the Golf Digest social team is just so, so incredible. And if that's the space that you want to play in, even if it's not necessarily like you want to actually be physically doing the posting forever, but you maybe want to make content that lives on those channels, having a really good understanding of what works and what performs can be so, so helpful. So I think going back to the original question, which was like building a resume and does it look funky if you go 8 months, 8 months? Like, yeah, it might. But for me at the time, it was worth it because I knew what my long-term goal was, which was to do on-camera stuff and be a host. And I knew that going to that next spot, regardless if it might look funky on my resume, I would find a way to explain it, spin it into a positive. And two, it was all about like building more skills and more experiences for what I ultimately wanted to do. So I think if you look at it like that, even like some of my friends that maybe worked in golf and are looking to move to a completely different industry, a lot of times they look at their resumes and it's like, I think where a lot of people struggle, it's like they think their resume is their resume and they don't realize that like you should be tweaking your resume for every single job that you apply to make it look as good as possible for that particular job. So let's say you're working in the golf industry in advertising and you want to work in, I don't know, another, what would be another industry? Let's say entertainment, like out here, right? There are so, just because you worked in the golf industry, there are so many transferable skills that you can spin that description to look really great and show all the skills that you have to now help this company that's here in entertainment and vice versa. Let's say you're in advertising and golf and now all of a sudden you want to go work in, I don't know, just a different part of the golf industry. Maybe you want to go work for an equipment company, but before you were working for golf course management or something. You can then play up your knowledge of golf more so, you know? So I think people get in the habit of like, my resume is my resume. And it's like, no, that's not true at all. Like you should tweak your resume and it's not lying. You're just highlighting or bringing up the things that are going to make you look even more enticing to those potential employers and just highlighting the things that like, hey, here's what I can help you with. And here's how my skills are transferable to these industries. So I think that's what's really important when looking at a resume or building it is like, think of your long-term goals. And also even the other day I was talking to some women at Riviera who didn't work in golf and wanted to potentially work in golf. And I was like, instead of thinking of not working in golf, being a negative, right? Like, look at that as a positive, because we need people in golf that don't work in golf. We need fresh ideas and new faces and new perspectives in the game. So yeah, it's definitely, it doesn't have to be like linear. Like, you work in the golf industry, you always are going to be in the golf industry. Like, you can hop around. Like, you worked in, I worked in social media, and then I became a producer, and then I, you know, now I do on camera stuff and kind of a little bit of everything. And I think kind of why we wanted to talk about this was Michelle, because our guest that we're going to talk to you today, we're so, so excited about. I mean, he played golf in college, and then he was like a financial advisor, and now he's like an incredible actor. And he was actually, when he was on The Office, he was still being a financial advisor full time, which, how do you even do that? I have no idea. But life is not, you know, always linear. I mean, even Michelle, maybe it's been linear on paper up to this time for you in terms of like professional golf stardom. But now, I mean, would you have ever thought, like, in college at the time, that like you'd be retired at 32 and you'd be like a badass businesswoman investor? Like, would you have thought that's like, and now you could just go in any direction that you want to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was always kind of the goal. I never saw myself playing like forever. Mm-hmm. And I think going to Stanford and, you know, being around so many cool entrepreneurs, like, I've always wanted to be a part of the startup world, be involved with it. And I think, you know, being an investor like allows me to do that in a really fun way. But yeah, I think I'm really interested to talk to our guest because, you know, he really hasn't had a linear path to his success.
No.
You know, and it's funny how you're saying that, you know, you use your past experiences into your new jobs, and, you know, our next guest really did that.
Like, yeah, I'm very curious. Like, I have so many questions about how golf relates to acting and if there are any parallels there. But yeah, how did he start at Stanford on the golf team and then end up being a financial advisor and then end up being on The Office? Like, it's just so cool. So really, really excited to talk to Andy Buckley. I think you guys will really enjoy this conversation. You need a well-rounded game to succeed in golf, and the same goes for your finances. That's why we love SoFi, the all-in-one app that lets you bank, borrow, and invest. Download the SoFi app today to ace your finances. SoFi, get your money right. Banking products and loans offered by SoFi Bank N.A., NMLS 696891. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities LLC, member FINRA/SIPC. All right, well, before we introduce our guests, we got to switch out our mugs here, Michelle. Let's switch out our mugs. Thank you, Andy Buckley, for bringing us mugs and for coming out.
You got to have your... Do I use this officially?
Yeah,
there we go.
There we go. Cheers. All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers, Michelle.
There we go.
Andy, and since I am retired and looking for a new job...
Yeah.
I think I might be...
Your corporate material, Michelle. I think you should come to the New York Dunder Mifflin office. That's still... I sense it.
Zero.
I sense it.
Okay, thank you. You know. It means a lot hearing that from the CFO, CEO, and owner.
Hey, you know, yeah. I don't trust anybody with any other position, so I'll just do it all. I'm the coffee guy. I do everything. It's a one-man shop, Dunder Mifflin.
One-man shop. Andy, so I have to actually apologize to you because the first time I ever met
yes,
you...
Yes, I've been waiting for this since we first... No, I'm kidding.
So we were at the Comedy Gives Back golf tournament, which was an incredible event, and I was interviewing various comedians and actors that were out there, and I got to talk to you, and I remember you said to me, where'd you play college golf? And I said, Rollins College. Where'd you play college golf? Trying to be a bit of a smartass, and you said, Stanford. And I was like, oh yeah, you and Tiger Woods. And then I looked it up after. I was like, holy shit, this guy did play golf at Stanford. So I'm so sorry that I ever doubted.
Yeah, this is... Okay, I can leave now. Yes, I played my freshman year into my sophomore year. In the fall of my sophomore year, I kind of dropped off the team.
But you still played golf at Stanford, which is so cool. So I just want to go back to the beginning. Like, how'd you get into golf?
Well, I guess my dad played a little bit. And so I would sort of go to the course with him. And I mean, I guess I loved it. My dad was a college... He played college basketball in the Ivy League. And I don't think he played very much, but you know, he was on the team. So he was you know, pretty good athlete. My older brother was a very good athlete. He ended up being a quarterback at Stanford a couple of years ahead of me. But I just love golf sort of right from the beginning, and it was wild. I was really lucky in that my dad befriended a guy who ended up being like on tour, a guy who went to Duke, Bill Mallon, Dr. Bill Mallon. He was doctor now, but he and he's like one of the foremost experts on the Olympics. Actually, he's written like 30 books on the Olympics also, but he's still Duke. And I think he was like the main doctor for the Duke football team ultimately after his years on tour. So he played Duke, and then he was on tour for 3 or 4 years, or maybe 4 or 5 years. And so we like became, he was, became, you know, buddies with him actually before he turned pro. So when we were, we had moved from, I'm from Boston, we lived in St. Louis for a bit, suburbs, and then Chicago. And this is so long ago, aging myself, but this would be in the 70s. And so the Western Open would happen and he would stay with us. And I would just get to go to the course. Like I would just tag along and just hang out. And it's so funny when I think of that now, because like, I don't let my 12-year-old like do even walk across the street, you know, here in Los Angeles. It's like, no, what are you doing? You can't do that. Come here. Meanwhile, like I just get dropped off, or we'd get dropped off at like Wrigley Field for the day and all that stuff. But no, so I would get to go, and that whole week I would just kind of hang around. And it's so funny, like got to see all the, like so many of the great old pros. Chichi Rodriguez, like that's like the one story I remember. I was just sitting there on a bench. I think it was towards the end of the day, and he came up to me and sat down. I was like, "How you doing, kid?" And he's, you know, with like the great.
Yeah.
For you kids listening, Chichi Rodriguez, you can look him up.
Big deal.
But I guess that's how. And then I just loved to play, so I would just play all the time. Cog Hill was, you know, it's obviously it still is.
I played there. Yeah.
It was, you know, where I would play. Butler National was where it was then, which I don't even know if anything is at Butler National anymore. You know, one of the great Chicago clubs. But and so then that's it. That's how it began. And then, you know, I got lucky. I was just kind of an average, halfway decent, pretty good sort of junior golfer. But then everything, like lightning in a bottle sort of thing, between the summer of my junior and senior year in high school, I call it my Tim Tebow or my Linsanity moment, where like everything came together for 8 weeks. And I didn't win. I was leading the junior world and for a while, and the Insurance Youth Classic. And I ended up finishing, I don't know, top 20 in both those. But I qualified for the U.S. Amateur. It was like my big, big thing. And only 4 of us, I guess, in high school did it that year. So that kind of put me on college coaches' radars. But then I like went back. It's like it all disappeared. And, you know, the fall of my senior year in high school, I kind of went back to just being pretty good, you know, junior golfer, nothing special. But it was too late, you know, for the college coaches. I had the stats, and I was a third team All-American. I guess, you know, they needed someone from New England, aside from Billy Andre. I guess it was a few years older, but that was kind of it. And, you know, yeah, Mike Levy and Chris Hack, obviously Georgia Tech, Chris Hack, those guys were running it then. And I mean, it was phenomenal. And there's so many great golfers now. It's just insane. Like there might've been 200 or 300 back then. I wouldn't consider myself even one of those, but now it just feels like there's so many phenomenal, you know, players. It's crazy.
Yeah,
who are, you know, 15, right, or 16,
I know,
or whatever.
So good at such a young age.
Yeah. So when you were
pretty good at a young age, Michelle, I think, from what I understand.
Okay. Decent.
That was decent. But when you were there at Stanford, they didn't have Siebel. That new practice facility that they have at Stanford. Have you been there?
I've seen it. I haven't used it, but at this reunion I was at, was it 5 years ago? My 100th reunion. I saw it and it was just incredible. I keep meaning to go up there, and I keep meaning to like go in and say hi to sort of introduce myself to Conrad and you know, everybody else up there. But I listen to his Sirius XM show. I'm such a stiff. Like I'm such a golf nerd. Like I listen to golf. Katrick and McGinnis.
On tap.
God. I don't even know what these things.
This is the Sirius XM stuff. This is
what
like
talking about?
Nerd Central. Well, Conrad Ray has a show.
Like I also did not know that
on Sirius XM. And Katrick and McGinnis are guys on.
Yeah, Brian Katrick, on tap, a legend.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. Yeah. That's the thing that's so funny is...
and John, both of them.
I've gotten to know, A, being a golf nerd, and then B, the great fortune of being on The Office. so many guys, folks are fans of that. So I've gotten to meet a bunch of people, like whether they're guys on tour or caddies on tour or guys like Katrick or Tom Abbott and Terry Gannon lives like a block from us.
Oh, cool.
But we're over in on the other side of town and near Wilshire. Well, I'm like an 8-iron from Wilshire, I guess.
Oh,
I followed you at Wilshire.
Oh, you did?
Like,
oh,
gosh,
sorry.
This was, okay, so it was you, and you were with, I think you were with Jessica Corder, but you were definitely with Brooke Henderson. It was that threesome. It was a Friday. It was a Thursday, Friday. It was Friday morning.
Did I make the cut?
So.
I don't think I did.
I don't know if you did.
I don't think I did.
That was the thing you didn't know. I can't remember. I can't remember. I didn't have a ton of time.
So it was
time.
Definitely a Thursday or Friday.
I didn't have a ton of time. Yeah, it was definitely a Thursday or Friday. But I went out, and because Jirena Piller is a great friend of mine, like, you know, through she and Martin. And so I was out, you know, watching her. Although, no, I think it was the year she was pregnant. That was the year she was, like, she didn't play because she was pregnant. So whatever
so
year that
second
was.
Second choice to follow.
Yeah, it's like, Piller, she's not here. I guess I'll go follow. She went to Stanford. She's so good. She didn't even make the Stanford team. No.
I did not make the Stanford team.
That would be like a funny way to phrase it.
I didn't make the team. But Andy.
But anyway, so that's I don't know. So that's how I got started.
You were on the team at Stanford, and
Tim Schaaf was the coach, not Wally Goodwin.
So you went from there, and then how did we go from that to, you know, to
lucking out into that
acting?
I was doing plays, like I referenced the one before
but
we started.
But you said you were doing plays, but you weren't in the drama department.
Yeah, you know, like you can audition for things and stuff like that. I was a poli-sci major, which I...
But had you always loved acting and entertaining for me on
yes,
stage?
Yes, yeah. So I got started acting. I guess I would always sort of be like the kid. Yeah, I'll be the town crier, you know, or whatever when I was 8 or 12. But I saw there was one rainy day. You know, when I was in high school in the summer, so I wasn't golfing. And East of Eden came on, which is, you know, one of the three James Dean movies. And I didn't know who James Dean was. It was like before the world was so, you know, marketed, and, you know, kids are 8 years old and they know who Elvis is and Marilyn Monroe and all that. But it was just incredible. It was just like an incredible sort of eye-opening movie to see. And that was kind of how it started, I guess. Then I just started auditioning for high school plays, and I would do that. I was a golfer who did high school plays and who studied. I was very popular with with the ladies. Who's the stiff? It's like three strikes. So I did those. Then golf obviously was the thing that helped me get into school. So I did that at Stanford, and then I mean I would come down here in the summers also, like my junior and senior year. Like I took off a semester, a trimester. Actually, it ended up being two trimesters, and came down here to try and get parts. My junior year, I finally actually, you know, got my SAG card, which was great. It's always kind of a difficult thing to do, but the old catch-22 of getting into a union. So then, after I graduated, I, you know, moved to New York to study acting. My folks were very excited. Finished Stanford. Wait, you're what? You really?
This isn't just from Stanford.
This isn't just a joke. You know. This guy's going to work for Apple. This guy's
But you're
starting.
You were actually a financial advisor.
That was because acting did not go well. So I moved to New York, study acting, then move out to LA and sort of have very limited success, occasionally getting to do like a small guest spot, or really even smaller, like a co-star spot, they call it, or a couple of times a year. And, you know, you sort of kid yourself into thinking that you're a lot closer to bigger success than you actually are, which I later, like years later, realized as I was sort of in the mix of, you know, getting this part or that part, whether you get it or not, you're sort of in the mix and you realize, oh my goodness, I like back then when I thought I was like close, I was, you know, 1,000 miles away. But yeah, so I tried to do that. I mean, in my 20s, basically sort of into my early 30s, and it did not go well. It did not go well at all. And so I packed it in, I guess. My wife, who is my wife now, is my girlfriend then, said, you got to come up with something else. This is just not, you're not going about things right. And just get away from it and maybe quit. And so I was trying to figure out what am I going to do? And Merrill Lynch, and, you know, they were kind enough to hire me. You know, I had a friend there. He said, come interview. Come on, you know, you're a personable guy. You're a good golfer. They'll probably hire you just off of that, which I think is what it was. And it's great. I loved it. It's fantastic. I absolutely loved it and did it. I mean, I did it almost 11 years, I guess. The whole time I was lucky enough to be on The Office, that was my job, it was my career. A financial advisor. The Office was my side hustle, as the kids say.
Being on The Office was... You know, though? It's funny. I want to go back to the thing that you said about, not making it and, thinking that you're close and you're not. And that's, one of my personal frustrations with, I played golf. We all played golf here. And going from playing golf, which is, very clear, right? If you shoot 67 and I shoot 70, there's no arguing here.
Right,
very black and white.
Yeah,
whereas,
yeah.
Now, I guess being in more of, an entertainment role, it's much more subjective. And, not necessarily getting, an acting gig, but, I find out that they pick someone else to do, post-round for blah, blah, blah. And I'm like... what could I have done? And that's for me, the frustrating thing and something that I love about golf is that it's very clear what the lowest score is, the lowest score. It doesn't matter what you look like. Doesn't matter what you sound like. It is what it is. And I just find that it just was kind of frustrating for me moving into the entertainment space because
very much.
You want it so badly, but if the guy doesn't like your nose, you're not going to get the part.
It is. And it's very much like that. And you have my wife has become a pretty sought after acting teacher, acting coach, and I mean she's and deals with a lot of sort of household names and all that who are clients, and then guys like me, and then people who are just starting or singers who are transitioning, a whole variety of things. But and she teaches a class also, and I mean some phenomenal acting is going on in her class, and it's like, why isn't that guy or that woman you sort of have no idea. And some of it, it's types, types. Some of it's looks and then you might have someone who you think, look at that. She's got it all. He's got it all. But it doesn't necessarily translate to TV or the screen, if you will, TV mm-hmm. or movies for whatever reason. And then there's that whole thing of, no, we can't. We got too many people white that dudes. Look like this one. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And and then there's obviously there's so much luck that goes into it. I mean, you, as Gary Player said, the harder you work, the luckier you get, all that stuff. Yeah, well, it's Gary Player now. He follows me on Instagram. I was so excited when he followed me. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
Maybe this has been an avid Office fan.
Maybe. I mean, I post things about golf. It's just bad. It's bad.
So did I hear this right? You were still doing financial advising. Is it a verb?
Yes.
While you're on The Office?
Yeah. That was because, I was never a regular on The Office, and it's a considerably different pay structure, pay scale. And I wasn't on it nearly as much as people seem to think because they would refer to my character a lot. David Wallace just called, but I wasn't on the show that week, so I didn't actually
get paid that week. Wallace.
I just said my name. So that happened a fair amount. But I mean, because initially, and it was my patron saint, as I call her, Allison Jones, if you're listening, who's the casting woman for it. And it was her idea. I mean, it was crazy. I hadn't acted in years. I bump into her. This is in October of 2005, and she's like, what are you doing, Buckley? At like the local, she's from Boston. I'm from Boston area, and she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm a financial advisor. I'm married. I got a son. Apparently I'm an adult now." And she's like, "Well, just give me your card just in case." And she would always do some of the great comedies. And she called me. It was nuts. 4 months later is how it happened. You should come audition. You're the CFO. They'll like that. You're a financial guy. They'll like that. And somewhat similar to the character. And so I did. And it was that whole thing of, and I guess you could liken it to so many things in life, but it was just like a whole different attitude, different approach. I wasn't needy and I didn't need the job. It was just fun to act. And I was just excited to get to go in and have a couple of, scenes to do. And I was a fan of the show. And so that was my focus. And as luck would have it, they hired me. And then they just, and that was it, because it was just one day, one episode. Then a year later, they called me, and I ended up doing 3 or 4 right towards the end of that season. But same thing, it still only took 3 or 4 days. And then so even when they started using me much more, in seasons 5 and 6. It was still 20 days out of the year, you know, and I was still at Merrill Lynch, and I mean,
did the people at Merrill Lynch, were they like, what?
It was a bit of a big deal, second. You know, yeah.
Your clients were like, wait.
Is it David Wallace? Is my financial advisor?
Yeah, no, nobody wants that. Like, I don't want some actor handling my money. But at that point, I had a couple of partners, you know, and they were starting to do a lot more of the work. It's like, hey, guys, I'm getting all these opportunities because of this show. Can you guys really sort of make sure the clients are covered, et cetera? Because I might be able to, you know, turn this thing into something. Again, it wasn't that I was busy on the show. It was that the opportunities that came from it. And, you know, you start auditioning a lot, and it takes a fair amount of time. Mm-hmm. And whether you get the part or not. And then if you get the part, it takes that much more time. So, but yeah, until almost like when the show ended is when I, which is terrible timing, when I finally left Merrill Lynch. But I had been on another show, like one of these teen dramas that we filmed in Austin, that I got to go out. It was so fun. I got to go out to the UT course. This is when Jordan Spieth was still there. And because we filmed out there at the club like once every couple of weeks. And I got to become buddies with the, you know, some of the guys there, and so like, yeah, go down. You can go to the other end of the range, which was just so fun. And like, so that's that kid's supposed to be the next, you know, kid. And what a sweet kid he is. I mean, he's not a kid now, but he was then, Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, I met him a couple times for 2 minutes, and he just seemed like such a high quality kid.
So I have a question.
But yes, the long answer to yes, I was still at Merrill Lynch.
That's amazing. That's crazy.
And I never said I was a good financial advisor.
That's fair. Yeah. You know, looking at the clips of The Office, I just have to ask. So I just finished working on a golf sketch comedy show, which has been really, really fun. And I'm very new to acting, but I've really enjoyed it. But I had a hard time sometimes not laughing. And because we did a little bit of improv, like we did this one field piece where we went out and asked people questions and I was wearing a wig, et cetera. And the guy that I was doing it with is a stand-up. And so he's done this kind of stuff a lot and was able to keep a straight face. But I look at what you guys are doing, and I think the moment that I'm thinking about in particular is when Michael Scott, you ask him, like,
are you doing right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, don't ever, under any circumstances, to anyone. Yeah. Like, and you, I mean, you look, you're obviously, your character is just, but like, are there like two parts of you?
We did a lot of takes.
A lot of takes?
Yeah,
okay.
I would burst out laughing constantly. Okay. I mean, it's you know, how can you not? I mean, after a while, I would sort of figure it out, and you bite your lip or whatever.
Right, you figure out how to do it. But I'm like, I would think the camera guys are laughing.
Oh,
like,
so often that would happen. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, he's one of the funniest guys on the planet. You know, one of the nicest, loveliest, sweetest guys too. But yeah, I mean, and it's funny, as the seasons went on, and I got to come to, like, I would be in the Scranton office, and I had more scenes with, you know, I had scenes with Ed, or I had scenes with, you know, Jim, or John Krasinski, or Rain, and Jenna, and I was like, man, oh, man, and I would laugh during those, and I was like, Rain's really funny, you know, Jim Krasinski's really funny, Jenna's really funny, mm-hmm. You say, when you start acting with people, like, you've really, and same thing, you know, you burst out laughing. Like, all right, Buckley, come on. All right, let's do it again.
Yeah.
You know, or the camera guys. There was one scene, I mean, it was crazy. The longest it took to do a scene was the Ed Helms in the cheese cart scene, and he's explaining all these cheeses, and Steve's underneath the cart hiding. He thinks, like, Jim / John / Jack Ryan is trying to get his job, and so he's, like, trying to, you know, sneak and see what's going on. But anyway, Ed had everybody laughing for literally, like, an hour. It was always like Steve would start laughing under this. He's hidden under this card, or I would, or John, or the camera guys, or the sound people, or you know, it's or Ed. He would just whatever he was doing. A lot of times, like the person who's doing it is just making themselves laugh, and then just start laughing.
Yeah.
How much is it was improv?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? That's none of it. Like
really?
Well, 2%. You know, so really? Not quite none. But isn't that so funny? I mean, because it just feels.
So natural.
So much that way, yeah. And, I mean, none of my stuff was improvised. And it's interesting. I mean, Steve's pretty much word for word. He would do it, and I guess this is a thing they learn at Second City. This show I was just working on the last few years, HBO thing called Avenue 5, Susie Nakamura.
And if people aren't familiar with Second City.
Yep, so Second City is like the Notre Dame football of comedy, I guess, or the Alabama football, or, you know, Oklahoma State of golf.
You went to the Groundlings. You studied at Groundlings,
yes,
right?
Yep. But Second City was before that. And so the three places are Second City and then the Groundlings out here. Second City started in Chicago. And then UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, which is the much newer one, but still it's been around 20 years. But like Second City, how crazy is this? So you go to Second City. There was a time when the sketch group at Second City, in the like this of the seven people, it was Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Tina Fey, I think Bonnie Hunt, who might you guys probably know who that
is.
Renee Zellweger's sister in Jerry Maguire, just to pick probably her biggest movie. And there was one other, like Adam McKay. No, I don't think Adam McKay was in it, but and he's the guy that he directed. He used to direct a bunch of Will Ferrell movies, and they were. He was the head writer at Saturday Night Live and all that stuff. But I mean, it's crazy. Like talk about like a small group of people and like a bunch of superstars. But I'm sure I'm forgetting what the original question was. Oh, improv. It was all pretty much scripted.
That's awesome.
And they would have sort of alternate lines. All right, try this line occasionally, and the talking heads when you're talking to the camera. Mm-hmm. There would be four or five different lines each time.
Yeah.
You know, but again, some of it was probably more improvised. Like I was only there. I mean, I wasn't there a ton of the time, maybe not even 10% of the time, I bet, of the whole run of the show. So there might've been more, but as I understand it and my experience, it was 98% of it is scripted.
Yeah, scripted. You mentioned your wife being an acting coach. I'm curious. So my dad, golf instructor, was my mom's.
I did not realize that.
was my mom's swing instructor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I'm curious. And so that's how they met. My mom went to go get lessons with my dad. So
I didn't know that's how they met.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that
part.
Oh.
I'm curious. Is your wife, like, does she
coach me?
You?
Yeah. And I should have listened to her years ago. I probably wouldn't have had to go to Merrill Lynch. what do you know? You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, we met. We were students in a class of a guy who was, like, the big teacher and still is. And she's kind of, she's becoming, like, one of the handful of pretty sought-after teachers. But so that's how we met. And I now listen to her. For the first audition for The Office, I worked with her on it. But and that's the thing, it's wild. It's like, you have a swing coach, Tiger's got a coach. Every NBA guy's got a coach, baseball, like so many people, corporate people who speak a lot, they have coaches and all that stuff. And you don't necessarily think of it as like actors still having coaches, like Marlon Brando used to work in Al Pacino. I used to know Al Pacino's coach. I don't know, but deep way after The Godfather, But no, it's like who? Margot Robbie's one of her people, and Channing Tatum and Jennifer Aniston. And, she coached Jared Leto when he won his Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club.
He's great in that.
And it's wild. Like it's Forrest Whitaker. She's worked with him, not on everything, but, off and on, and just different Rachel McAdams, like a whole Jennifer Garner. I'll just keep naming.
Yeah, just keep going. Just keep going.
Chris Pine, she used to work with him.
That's amazing.
But it's wild because you don't necessarily think that people have it, but they, it's like, them ready if they're starring in a movie and they want to feel 1,000% confident and know that they're doing their best. And if they're filming a movie or a TV show or whatever, Mandy Moore, she's been working with her forever. Everything's filmed out of sequence. I mean, if you're like the star of some studio movie or independent, whatever it is, or not even the star, it's just you want to feel as confident as you can. And it's day one, they might be filming pages, 25 through 30. And day two, it's the opening of the movie. And day three, it's like the big love scene. Day four, it's the big shootout scene. Mm-hmm. So you want to know where you are. And so, like, she's not really on the set or anything like that. A couple of people she is, but most of the time she just preps them before, sends them on their way. Off you go.
Off you go. Andy, I wanted to ask you something. You and I were texting a little bit last night about Jim Nance because you watched that interview.
That was so, yeah. So cool.
I'm so glad you liked it. But I thought it was interesting. And one thing that I noted about One thing that I noted about Jim Nance is how much he loves being Jim Nance, and not in like a narcissistic way, but in the way of he recognizes how much joy he can bring to people. Like when I played Pebble with him, he went back to the groups behind us.
You said that, yeah.
Because
yeah.
he just knows that he could make the run at Pebble.
Takes 5 minutes and people will be talking about it forever.
Exactly.
It's you know.
Exactly. And then also I was at the WM Phoenix Open and you see someone like Christopher McDonald there who's like, shooter, doing his like shooting for Gavin bit. And I feel like with you, obviously being, you know, a very successful actor, but really known for your David Wallace character, is that something, like, I feel like you kind of are the same in that way that, like, you know
you mean,
how much...
You mean the guy that showed up with Dunder Mifflin mugs and Dunder Mifflin David Wallace cards?
No, but I love that you...
that he hands out to people in airports?
No, but it's awesome, and I'm curious, like, does it get annoying, or do you
come on,
like
it's like
it?
A like, gigantic break, you know?
Okay,
I mean, it
so
completely
it.
Changed my life, you know?
Okay, I love that
I don't have
you...
to get yelled at for messing up a municipal bond order anymore, you know. No, it's I love it. It's you know, and it's I mean, I get a kick out of it, and you know, why not? And I think that's phenomenal that Jim Nance does that, because it's 5 minutes and just makes someone's, I mean,
right.
It's that whole thing, the Arnold Palmer thing of make sure you sign your name right, and you know, give every single person that be the last person to leave.
Yeah,
it's so funny. Ah, I wish I would have stuck around. I got to do this is like 12 years ago, before they changed. It was right before they changed the studio. I kind of sat in on Morning Drive before, you know, like you know, with Gary and Whit was there and Charlie. It was right before Damon Hack started, but it was right before they changed to like the new studio. But Arnold Palmer was coming in like the next day, and I had to leave for whatever reason. And I mean, there had to be a real reason I had to leave. But it would have been so fun to just, because I was like, can I stick around and like meet him?
Yeah.
I said, sure. But then I had to go.
Yeah,
but it was very funny because Nick Faldo came in.
Oh, yeah. How
and
was that?
It was great. He smells incredible. Whatever cologne he had was like, and he's like massive. And it was just, it was phenomenal to just sit there and listen to him. It was like, that was sort of a surprise. I don't think it was planned, but he came in. It was great, you know, for 20 minutes just listening to him talk.
I guess this is a question for both of you guys. Like, your relationship to fame, I mean, you know, I'm sure you go to the grocery store, and maybe it's a little different in, like, this town, because there's famous people on every corner. But if somebody walks up to you and says, like, oh my gosh, are you Andy Buckley, David Wallace? Like, again, it's something that you would embrace, right? I mean, I'm with Michelle all the time, and people will stop her, and yeah, you're incredibly gracious with your fans. Is fame something that like you wanted, like that was like would be cool if you became a famous actor?
I guess, yeah. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I thought I was going to be James Dean. You know, like that's, you know, apparently that did not happen. I get a real kick out of it now, and I love it when I get to meet people that I'm fans of. You know. And it's great when I've never met anyone that wasn't, you know, appreciative that I was saying hello and like, you know, fans of theirs or whatever, which is always nice. You know, I mean, I got to meet Bill Murray. Bill Murray's phenomenal. It's like, he didn't disappoint guys who might be Sean Penn. I, you know, and this was years ago, but he, you know, it was 30 seconds, but he couldn't have been, you know, sweeter in those 30 seconds. 'Cause I was pretty hammered. And quite an embarrassment. You have Sean Penn. Oh my God. It wasn't quite that bad, but I referenced this one of his very early movies, which I think he appreciated.
There you go.
But no, I mean, I don't know. You're a heck of a lot more. It happens to you, I'm sure, much more than me. I get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen all that much. You know, it's like if I'm in an airport or at Starbucks or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. How does it happen to you? It happens to you a good amount, Michelle.
I mean, it's like really random nowadays. But when I was younger, I don't know, I really struggled with it because, like, I tried so hard to be normal. I think we all do when we're 13, 14, 15, 16. And I went to a regular high school. So, like, I would go out to dinner with my friends and someone would come by the table and I would like be really awkward about it. So people sometimes misunderstood that as me being like a total bitch, but it was just like me, like,
you're like a teenage girl.
I just like did not know. I was like, A, this is weird. Like, B, why are people coming up to me? And C, like, I'm with my friends. Like, they don't really know about golf. Like, I'm like, can I just be normal? So I really struggled with it, honestly, when I was younger. I really started to get better when I started hanging around Ricky Fowler a lot. And I just, you know, people would just come up to him all the time. And he was so good with people. And I think I just saw it from the outside looking in, like how that affected people's lives. And like, I started to understand it a little bit more. And I was like, after that, you know, granted, I'm also in my 20s. I'm not in school and going through puberty. And I just started to feel a lot more comfortable with it. And I also, you know, reshifted it, being like, this is so lucky that people are coming up to me and that I've made an impact on people's lives. But when I was younger, I definitely struggled with it a lot.
Well, that's a super tough thing. You know, like you're a teenager, you just happen to be, you know, phenomenal.
That's incredibly awkward.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's but yeah, I guess as you get older. Fowler seems like such a nice guy.
Really?
What a sweetie.
Yeah. Just truly nicest guy ever.
That's the fun. And I don't know if I've said this before, like it's so funny. And it's like, I'm like the luckiest guy in the world to have like gotten on The Office and then stayed there. And it's just insane how popular it's become. Because like being a golf nerd, you know, Scotty Scheffler's a big Office fan. So I got to meet him, shoot the breeze with him. I walked with Meredith, his wife, at Riviera, like when they were just out here, and Colin Morikawa's wife, their cat, they're newlyweds still. And it's just like so funny.
Yeah,
it's like some goofball who got on a show, and then because I get to chat with these guys who are and so many others. It's so many others over the years, and then it's just like funny. Like Peyton Manning's big Office fan. I do a lot of these corporate, I'll MC corporate events, not a lot, like one a month or something like that. And so one of them, like 4 or 5 years ago, I was introducing him and he was the big speaker and he was fantastic. He's obviously, you know, super funny, but I'm like, hey Peyton, my name's Andy. I'm going to be the guy introducing you. And he's like, I know who you are, Wallace, which is like, you know, you just can't help but feel pretty cool. You know,
you are pretty cool.
Some of these situations.
I love that.
But
that's so fun.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be like to be as... I got to do a thing with the... right before COVID started, and it was great. I'm sure someone canceled. Like the night before, I got a call from the fellow Mike Antolini, who runs... he's one of the guys who runs the Tigers Foundation, but runs Riviera, the event. And he's like, Buckley, what are you doing tomorrow? I'm like, I think you're about to tell me. What am I doing tomorrow? He's like, all right, Tiger has this thing he's doing. It's going to be a six-player team. He's coaching one. Bubba's coaching the other, you know, actors, athletes. You're going to be on Bubba's team. And, of course, my first question was, you know, who canceled? Can I send them a thank you note? And he's like, nah, nobody canceled. I'm like, yeah, sure. You're telling me the night before. All right. And it was unbelievable. And it was a blast. It was me and Sebastian Maniscalco. I always bungle his name. Maniscalco, your buddy. And we played A-Rod and Michael Pena, who's a pretty good golfer.
Oh, I love Pena.
Pena beat us. He made a putt on the last hole, and we lost. We were the last group. But seeing how, like, I had never met Tiger, first of all, which was really funny. I don't think he watches The Office either. Because it was funny, I met him. Hey, Tiger, Andy Buckley, how are you? You know, he's like, yeah, good. And he had a big line of people. I said, you know, I actually played on the Stanford team many, many years ago. He's like, looking at me, just completely puzzled. And like, what? Like, you played the course. It's a great course. No, I was on the team. He's like, huh? And he's like, yeah, Tim Schaaf was the coach before Wally Goodwin, and you know, it was Josh Monry and Lou Dickey, and you know, I gave him like a quick spiel that like showed that, like, all right, I guess I kind of know something about what I'm talking about. He's like, oh, wow, oh, okay. And it was so fun. I was showing him like my power belt sand wedge later that day, which I still use. It's like 60 years old, and my old Arnold Palmer original putter. And he's, you know, it was so exciting. But he's so put. I mean, the guy does not have a second to the day. He's just, and obviously it was his tournament, his host and all that. But boy, you just see how smart he is. He's super. He's got a very good sense of humor, and just how I had like a whole new appreciation for my gosh, this guy literally not a second of the day does he have, kind of to himself, and he's just always, everybody always wants something from him.
Yeah,
but it was so exciting.
Cool. That's such a great event. It was the best.
So cool.
All right, Andy, we are gonna do five questions presented by Five Iron Golf to wrap.
Iron Golf.
You ready?
All right. Okay.
Here we go. Most nervous you have ever been on a golf course?
Oh, by far the first tee in this event. Well, like, yeah, okay. I'll say that. I was going to say that I had a putt. I have two. I'll say a tie. But I'm there, and like Tiger's there, and Bubba's there, and you know, there's like a crowd of people, and you just, it's the 10th hole at Riviera, and I was exceptionally nervous. I mean, I literally you know could have whiffed, or you know, it was just, I mean, it's so nerve wracking and exciting, but nerve wracking. But the most nervous, like a close second, or probably might even be first. And that's how I qualified for the U.S. Amateur. It was funny. So it's 36 holes. Called for darkness. I had 6 holes to go. So I got to, this was the lucky thing. I got to go home because I was starting to get tired. Like if I had to finish out, I wouldn't have made it. Go home, have a pizza, come back the next day. And on the last hole, 36th hole, I hit. See, I hit it in the fairway, par 4, and I remember my dad was following, and he came. He said, "Hey, Andy, hey, just if you birdie this hole, you're in. If you par it, there's like a playoff, you know, for one or two spots, like 15 people." And I'm like, "Oh shit, okay." and then I hit it to like 20 feet, and I mean, I like just study the putt, etc. I'm just so nervous. And then, as luck would have it, like it, you know. But I'm standing that, like that was probably the most nervous.
And you made it
over that putt. Yes, and it was like it circled and it fell in, and you know,
US
I just
AM
like
bound.
Started crying. I think I'm sure. I mean, it was like, you know, it was one of those life changing things. Like holy smokes, you know. And again, it was that Linsanity, Tim Tebow. Like you know, you have it. The guy's like the best guy on the planet for 2 months, and then he goes back to being. You know, just like another, you know, in their case, you know, another guy in the, you know, in the NFL or in the NBA, you know. Just,
that's so cool, though.
But, okay, so that's my long verse. I know this is designed to be a rapid fire thing.
That's a great story, though. I was like, what's going to happen?
You know.
Slightly silly question, but have you ever been naked fountain hopping at Stanford? I know, that's a tradition.
I guess I get to do it. I guess that's in my future. You know, when I visit there, they'll say, "Who's the creepy old guy who's naked in the fountain?" I didn't get to do this when I was a student, but I was naked in the play Hair in Frost Amphitheater. I was Burger, and for you musical theater folks out there, I was such a bad singer that they got somebody else to sing my songs who was supposed to be my alter ego character.
But oh, no.
It was, and I did like, you know, hats off to the director for still letting me play the part, and because it's so fun to get to do.
That's not in the script.
No. The guy was like, "I don't know what to do, Buckley. You can't sing a note." And I was like, "I know."
People tell me that I sound like Miley Cyrus, and I'm like, only when I talk, not when I sing, unfortunately.
I don't know. Well, try do a line of Flowers.
I can buy myself flowers.
No. Wrecking ball. My wife coached her, loved her.
Really?
Said she was phenomenal.
Oh,
she thought she was such a hoot.
For Hannah Montana?
She's coached so many people.
For Hannah Montana?
No, it was, she did like, I don't know if it was 10 years ago, 12 years ago, or something like that, but it was, she did a couple of episodes of, I don't know if it was The Big Bang Theory.
Oh,
or,
did she do Black Mirror?
No, it was a comedy.
Oh,
definite
comedy.
Mm.
She's great in Black Mirror.
But good. So naked fountain hopping is in my future, I guess. So that's good.
Yeah.
Watch out, Stanford. Okay. Wallace is gonna. No! Don't. I'll like get myself in trouble. I'll be canceled for being creepy.
Okay. If they made an office style show, like a fictional show on golf, who would you want to play on tour?
Ricky Bobby. No.
Jay Monahan.
You know. Who would I want to play? Like the actual person?
Mm-hmm.
That was if Ricky Bobby became a pro golfer.
Yeah. that would be a great show.
Oh, who would I want to play? I'll say Josh Teeter because that would mean Teeter's back on the big tour. My buddy. He's a good buddy of mine.
Okay.
But no, that's not my real answer. Well, I guess who would, I don't know.
I feel like
know.
You'd be Jay Monahan. I feel like you'd be
all right,
a commissioner.
I'll be, there we go.
Right?
All right. I'm going with Michelle's answer.
Okay, Jay Monahan. I could see you at the press desk. All right, guys, the Live Tour is not a threat. Going into
how would the office handle this PGA Live drama?
I hopefully in a funny way. I imagine. Like, the writers would come up with all kinds of funny stuff.
What's your bucket list golf trip?
Well, it's so fun. I got to, so the show, this Avenue 5, which is no longer, they canceled, but we filmed it in London. And so, I mean, I got to, I went up to St. Andrews. I didn't actually get to play St. Andrews, but I just walked around. I was with a couple of guys from the show who weren't golfers. So we walked around. Oh, heaven. But I went over to Royal Port Rush, played there a couple of days. My buddy Chris Mash, if you're listening, pal, who lives there in town. And you know, Royal St. George's, all that. I mean, I guess, what would it be?
Would it be to actually play St. Andrews in?
Would, I guess it could be that. I mean, I've played Pebble Beach and Spyglass. I've never played Cyprus. I've never played Augusta. I've never been to Augusta. Two times I got invitations to play Cyprus from the same friend of mine, who's not a member, but I had to cancel because the office needed me that week. Darn it. Exactly. What would it be? I don't know. I mean, I guess it would be getting to play in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. That would be kind of, like, that's the granddaddy of them all. It's funny when you say, like, did you want to be, you know, famous actor or whatever, like, whatever. I mean, one of my reasons for, like, when I was starting to, like, get on the show, I was like, oh, maybe one of these days I'll get to, like, play at Pebble. But I play in the BMW, the Corn Ferry event, which is a tier lower, but it's phenomenal. You're out there and all these pros and play with Hoagie the first year I played in it, and it's like, shot like 29 on the first nine. Like, who's this guy? And then eventually he won Pebble, that's right, two years ago.
Yeah.
I guess that, I mean, that's like the big dream. That would be.
Yeah.
I would love to play in that. And I've never made an effort to try and do it in the Lake Tahoe event, just because I was like, all right, if I'm playing in this, I'm going to start practicing. I want to try and.
Yeah.
Not that I would reach the level of. I mean, some of those guys are for non-pros. I mean, Tony Romo made, what, U.S. Open sectional qualifying? Yeah.
Marty Fish shot 62 in that Tahoe event.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, it's. And I wonder if any of those guys. I mean, so Romo tried to, you know, U.S. Open qualify. Who's. And I just read about another former NFL guy who. Same sort of thing. It's like, I can't remember the guy's name. He's not super, he's not like as famous as Romo, but it's like if you make that, you're pretty good. You know. And I'm very aware that I'm sitting with the major champion, Michelle. I'm just letting you know. I'm very aware of that. So as I say, someone's pretty good, but like for a layman, you know, if you will. So there we go. Those two tournaments. If you're listening,
yeah,
the Tahoe event. I'll bring Dunder Mifflin mugs.
The mugs are great. The mugs are great. Okay, last question for you, Andy. Who would win in a golf match, Michael Scott or David Wallace?
I think Wallace would win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any particular reason? I mean, obviously, maybe.
The power built sandwich. I get to touch around the green. He gets to play more. You know, Michael Scott doesn't really get to play. Wallace just seems like he's played a lot of corporate golf. You know.
Yeah, that's fair.
In between. Vacuum cleaner inventions. Suck it. Michelle doesn't, you know.
I'm going to watch it.
That's so you don't have to. Come on, you have a young daughter now. You don't have time for those things.
You guys, three words, 5-iron golf. You can golf, practice, and party. It's essentially a high-tech, inclusive urban golf experience designed for golfers and non-golfers. With 20 locations across the country, 5-iron golf is great for date night, quality time with your family, or honestly, the best happy hour a corporate work event has ever seen. I've been to quite a few of them. They are so, so, so much fun. So make sure you guys check out 5-iron, and Golf Mostly listeners get an exclusive discount. If you mention Golf Mostly at checkout, you'll get 25% off your next sim rental booking. So run, do not walk to your nearest 5-iron, you guys. You will not be disappointed. You're going to love it. Andy, thank you so, so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. What a treat. This is such a blast.
This is awesome. We'll have to get out on the golf course soon.
I'm in. Sign me up.
All right. Cheers, guys. That was really fun.
Dunder Mifflin.
Dunder Mifflin.
There we go. Michelle is now indoctrinated. Never heard of this show.
What is The Office?
Exactly.
All right. David Wallace. What a guy. I just can't stop laughing whenever I'm around him.
Such a sweet guy. I need to watch The Office now.
You do.
I cannot believe I've never watched The Office.
We just showed you one of the most iconic scenes, and it just, everything is so, so funny.
Just, I know, I need to watch it. That, Parks and Rec, we've talked about this.
Yeah, I haven't watched Parks and Rec. I need to watch that too. Yeah. We can do that together. Producer Chris is looking at us like we're not, so.
Well, you've watched Parks and Rec? Is it good? Okay. Aubrey Plaza's in it too,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
White Lotus too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So definitely, yes. We'll work on getting up to date on our TVs, but we should circle back next time.
Yeah, let's circle back.
Okay, we'll circle back. We should watch some Parks and Rec and actually talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
I think I'm in Parks and Rec.
You are.
Yeah.
Someone texted me about that last week, Michelle. Literally.
Yeah. One of the characters cut out a picture of my face and put it on like a bikini body and put it on his wall. Right?
Yes. Yes. Because my friend texted me literally last week. She goes, hey, you guys, three words, 5 iron golf. You can golf, practice, and party. It's essentially a high-tech, inclusive urban golf experience designed for golfers and non-golfers. With 20 locations across the country, 5-Iron Golf is great for date night, quality time with your family, or honestly, the best happy hour a corporate work event has ever seen. I've been to quite a few of them. They are so, so, so much fun. So make sure you guys check out 5-Iron, and Golf Mostly listeners get an exclusive discount. If you mention Golf Mostly at checkout, you'll get 25% off your next sim rental booking. So run, do not walk to your nearest 5-Iron, you guys. You will not be disappointed. You're going to love it. Michelle are crushing it. I was flipping channels at Parks and Rec as a fav. The episode has Michelle's photos on the wall and they mentioned her. Yes, yeah. You're in the show. You have to watch it. Okay, all right. We're doing that, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Like we say always, make sure you're following at Golf Mostly on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, of course, for all the clerps. That was clips. The clerps. The clerps.
Oh, gosh.
Michelle is at Michelle Wee West, and I am at Hallie Led. We will see you next time.